everybody. Welcome to Wallace Hartley Presents.
The podcast with
the
no name.
The podcast. That's right. Now, about that. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Episode 2 of the podcast. And boy, do we have some great stuff for you today. Somebody commented. They said that you should keep the name Wallace Hartley.
Yeah.
Because it may be indicative of where our show's going, but also very, very appropriate for the times that we're in, going down with the ship and all.
And he did. We were wondering last week whether he went down with the ship or not.
He did.
I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Like a good man, he went down with that ship.
There you go.
Yeah.
And apparently the song was Near My God to Thee. That's what they were playing.
That is white as fuck. There's no way I know what that is.
Yeah, well, it's a Christian hymn, mm-hmm. my son.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope he found salvation in the deep.
I'm guessing he probably didn't. He probably, you know what? You know, when you hear about stuff like that, it's like, oh, wow, what a guy. Mm-hmm. He kept, you know, conducting the orchestra, went down with the ship. He was probably thinking, I don't have to worry about the gambling debts or the hookers.
Or this fucking syphilis.
I'm out of here.
Because those guys had crazy syphilis back then.
Did they? Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I'm just making that up.
Yeah,
but I'm guessing that they did.
Okay. So today we will talk about the big thing that everybody's talking about.
Aliens.
We'll get to that. We're going to have to do a whole special just for you.
We could do 1,000 specials
on aliens. Defunding the police. Defunding versus abolishing the police altogether. Could you imagine that? Think about that for a minute.
I just need to put my mind around it. I don't know what either of those terms even mean right now.
Well, I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
Also, it is National Indigenous Peoples Month, so I have a little short reading list for dumbass white folks mm-hmm. who really want to help. But
what about dumbass brown folks?
Well, yeah, sure. Too. Anybody. Yeah. Some good books that you can get into that'll give you a better idea of what the hell you're talking about, when to shut up, when to speak up. And one of my favorites on that list is The Inconvenient Indian, mm-hmm. which is a funny book. The guy who wrote it, you know, he's a professor, but he's just great because mm-hmm. he tells it like it is, mm-hmm. but he's got a good sense of humor about it. And I always recommend that to people mm-hmm. because white fragility, you want to ease them into it. So
you don't want to be too shrill.
No, you got to start with a little humor.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Because that shrill anti-racism, like, I don't like that.
I don't think anybody does. But you know what? The shrill in-your-face people are, I don't know, are they the opposite of Karens? You know what I mean? They're like Karens, but on the opposite side of the fence.
They're still fucking Karens.
Yes, they are, for sure.
They're still Karens, but they're... It's like they're using their wokeness as a weapon. It's like it's like I am so woke that I'll throw it in your face, and that's an insult to your baseness.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a lot like mansplaining, isn't it?
It's like woke-splaining.
Woke-splaining.
Yeah.
That's a good term.
Woke-splaining.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the 170 overdoses in Vancouver. Last week, this is June.
In BC.
In BC?
BC.
It wasn't just Vancouver?
Yeah, it wasn't just Vancouver.
Last week. Today is June 14th, mm-hmm. 2020. So this happened over the last week.
Yeah.
Well, everybody is, focusing on defunding the police. George Floyd, I said his name correctly this week.
Yes.
We're learning. Black Lives Matter, all that stuff. You know, I don't think anybody has really stopped, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it for a long time. It used to be all we were talking about was the fentanyl crisis. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that. We were going to talk about, I hate it when this happens. So we're going to talk about COVID, as usual, but also like some stuff that I have been quite adamant about, quite firm in my beliefs regarding COVID-19 and China.
You're pulling back from those positions.
Well, I'm not pulling back, but I'm going to talk about a couple of things.
Glenn, have you been red-pilled?
No, I haven't been red-pilled.
Not yet. We'll get there, folks. We'll get there. We'll pill them soon enough.
That's right. So, we're going to talk about a couple of things that I've read that have disturbed me because it kind of goes in the opposite direction. You know what? It's like, you ever have this happen? You defend the shit out of somebody because you know they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out everything people were saying about them was true.
I can understand that, but no, because I have a firm position.
Yeah.
I'm not taking positions.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
You should definitely be on a podcast.
Yes, yes.
What the hell?
Well, I don't fucking know, man.
Well, anyways, so that's kind of what it was like. It's like if China was my buddy, I was like going to bat for them, sticking up for them.
China's not your buddy.
I'm just saying if they were, that's the analogy.
Yeah.
It's
about the degrees of fascism. You need to understand that they're all fascists.
Yeah, no, I get that. But it was just, I thought people, you know, they were too quick to jump on the bandwagon there. It's like, let's blame China.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as it turns out, they weren't quite coming clean in the beginning of the COVID-19 thing.
Oh, we could always talk about Chinese saber rattling and... In India and Chinese and Indian,
oh yeah,
and Indian
yeah,
saber
that's
rattling
right
as well.
Yeah,
another thing going on
because
right now.
That's right on the border, right?
Yes, it is.
That's been going on for a while.
It's been going on for a while right now, but right now it's coinciding with a region that is very important to Chinese interests in terms of the Belt and Road project.
Well, and that's their big thing, isn't it?
Yes,
that's what they're doing, mm-hmm. And apparently they're investing heavily in Africa,
in Central Asia. Africa.
And this is, you know what it really reminds me of? It reminds me of like Japan pre-World War II. So all that militarism that happened, that was like their government at the time was full on military, we want to expand and we want to basically take over Southeast Asia. And not everybody was for that. This mm-hmm. was mostly the military.
I don't think anyone was for that except for Japan.
Well, yeah, but the general population was not. And many of the government, many of the diet were not. But there was this very strong military coalition that eventually got their way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were expanding, and they actually had this this attitude of, no, the rest of Asia is going to love us
mm-hmm.
because we're going to liberate them from the white people
mm-hmm.
who are screwing them, and then we're going to screw them.
Yeah,
but you know they're going to love us for it. Mm-hmm. It was like crazy thinking, and that's kind of what this whole Belt and Road thing reminds me of.
A little bit minus the wanton violence, destruction, and rape.
Well, yeah, but hey, that could come. You don't know.
I think if anything, I doubt it.
It can't be anything worse than what America, Canada, the UK,
it can always
have done when they go to war.
It can always be worse than that.
What else? Yeah, I talked about the. Did I talk about the reading list?
Yeah, you mentioned the reading
list.
Yeah,
and boo, boo, boo. Yeah, that's about it. So, tell me first, how has your week been?
You were telling me earlier
how pissed off you were and sick of hearing about shit.
Everyone's talking about fucking racism all the time. It's kind of annoying.
Yes.
It's just annoying. I turned off the news. I said that last week. I turned off the news. I turned off the news.
Again?
Then I turned it back on.
Yeah, you did. That's the
problem.
Then
I turned it off. I turned it back on. And it's just... It's confusing. It's confusing. It's like it's hard to make sense of what's going on right now when you're in the middle of the storm. I want things to settle down and then to do some analysis. It's hard to do some analysis when you when things that are very, very emotionally charged are thrown in your face. Like yesterday, there was another man killed. So you have the news just pounding on that case, investigating the minutiae of it. And I'm not really interested in the minutiae. I'm interested in more of the sort of larger themes, structural inequality. Those things are more interesting to me. I mean, we want to talk about the fentanyl crisis today. And we were also wanted to talk about defunding the police. And I've been thinking lately about the drug war.
Yeah.
And the drug war's sort of racist impetus and also its effect on militarizing the police. Because I think that that's probably a big part of where that fucking military budget goes to in the police.
I got to tell you, when I was out of the country for 10 years, when I came back in 2009, that was the first thing I noticed. Now, the downtown east side was one of my hangouts. I used to drink there on a regular basis. And the cops at the time, you know, the history of the cops in the downtown east side, like as we know it today, has been never been great. But I do remember a much more community policing style where it's like the cops who worked the downtown east side beat knew everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew them.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you weren't an asshole, you would not get a shit kicking. They knew who to go to when something happened. Like they just went, we'll just go talk to him. And it was just kind of like nobody got shot, that's for sure. That was not like these guys. I knew some of these cops, okay? I don't think that they had qualified on the range, like probably since they graduated from the academy.
No.
They spent a lot of time dropping by certain establishments and having coffee. Well, at least they had beverages in a coffee cup. But yeah, they really did know everybody. And I don't know, it was a lot. It was never great, especially if you were First Nations. But it was a lot chiller. And when I came back, so I was getting back to this, that's the first thing I noticed was the uniforms had changed. I was like, wow, they have like a big SWAT team now.
Because
that's what they were dressed like. Turns out that's the uniform now, right? And I was like, why is that? And also, the attitude was very paramilitary, very like LAPD style. And I'm just wondering, where did this all come from all of a sudden?
I don't know. I don't know. I've had numerous altercations with the police in the downtown east side. They've all been rather polite. They usually confiscate whatever I've gone down there to procure and throw it on the ground. That's fucking annoying. Smash it and tell me to get the fuck out of there. And if they see me again, they'll arrest me. I'll go walk around the block and procure some goods somewhere else and then leave.
Well, I got to tell you,
I've been cuffed on that street like 10 times in my life, never arrested.
Oh, yeah. Well, all my altercations with the police. I'm like Mr. Polite.
Yeah.
I remember I remember one time I got very upset and almost landed extra punishment on top because I was in court. And so I'd been stuck in holding for like 2 days. It was my own fault because I missed my original appearance. And anyways, long story. But I got up there and the guy who was, they were reading his charges prior to me. And he was like a pretty bad dude. And then when the arrest came, he assaulted the police. And he spit on them, and he swore at them, and he was kicking and tried to kick out the back window of the squad car and all this shit, right? And so I'm listening to this going, I'm laughing. Because, I am Mr. Polite when it comes to the cops because I don't want to get a shit kicking. Because once was enough. I was like, okay, they don't enjoy my sense of humor as much as I do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be polite from now on. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full. And that's what I was like on this particular charge. And anyways, they gave me, after all this shit, this guy gets like, I don't know, it was something stupid like 6 months probation and time served or some shit. Mm-hmm. Me, it was like a year, over a year, and a $700 fine.
A year?
Yeah. And I'm like, hang on.
Yeah.
What? The guy who was here before me was like, assaulted the police. You heard the report that they said, the cop even said mm-hmm. how polite I was mm-hmm. and cooperative. And the judge was just shaking his head, you know, because he was like, okay, so how many times have you been in front of me? How many times? How many missed appearances have you? You know, and just like, I'm like, okay, enough. Yeah. Just like, stop. I get it.
He's like, we've had enough of your bullshit.
Yeah. It's clear that
your yes sir, no sir yeah, aren't going to fucking fly this time.
The fact is, you are the Eddie Haskell of criminals, mm-hmm. and you have absolutely zero respect for the shit that we do. So we're going to maybe give you some. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, the downtown east side and that manner of policing that they have now, I've had, and it's funny having an interaction with the police yeah. on the other side of the law. Mm-hmm. So working in substance abuse, you know, youth, mental health and addiction, yeah, like you have run-ins with the cops and... it's totally different. I meet occasionally, you know, decent guys and decent women, depending on the force that you're dealing with. But in general, man, they are like some serious ass dudes, and they're all like ripped. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like, do you remember the days when you would see cops? Literally, the reason it's a cliche and a joke is because cops used to sit in donut shops drinking coffee. And these cops, you know, they weren't running any foot races, no. chasing people.
No.
These guys are all like the Rock.
Yeah.
What the hell's that?
I don't know. I think...
Are they on steroids? I'm thinking they are.
Or they're going to CrossFit.
Well, yeah, but...
supplements.
Are you working? Or are you just spending all your time in the gym?
Watching podcasts about getting jacked and strong and firing guns and being manly.
Holy shit. We're all in trouble. That's why, yeah, I'm on the abolish the police side now.
Oh. I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
About the downtown east side. You want to say the cops have changed?
Yes.
I'll tell you, the people have fucking changed too, man.
In what regard?
It's fucking savage down there. It's savage and more violent than it was, say, 20 years ago.
Yeah, you think?
I think it has a lot to do with the nature of the drugs being used.
Oh, well, that's for sure, yeah. Yeah, because when I left, there was my usual hangouts, which were Mentos. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Mentos?
Mentos? No.
Okay, close to the Gassy Jack statue, mm-hmm. there was Mentos Pub. And that, I guess that would have been it's on Abbott or Carroll. Mm-hmm. And then underneath Mentos was Ponies, mm-hmm. which was cabaret. Mm-hmm. And I really use that term loosely. Mm-hmm. It was like the bar scene from Star Wars. But yeah, that was one of the places I hung out, and all the usual, mm-hmm. you know, the Camby. Which the Camby not the Camby that we know today.
The Camby's gone now.
Is it gone?
It's gone.
Yeah, no,
it's gone.
Shit. It's gone. Really?
The place that had all the benches and shit like that where everyone sits communally?
Well, yeah, but the Camby became
Still kind of like a university pub.
Yeah, it became a backpacker student pub. When I drank there, it was hardcore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the kind of place that the doorman would stop and ask you if you had any weapons, and if you didn't, he'd give you some.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, I would have
tried the veal. I'm here all week.
I would have frequented these pubs, but I found it difficult to smoke crack in them. So usually.
So yeah, I was gonna say
usually loiter in the alley beside, but whatever.
At the time, there was obviously, you know, there was Down, there was
Rock Powder Down.
Yeah, that was it.
And the powder was up.
Yeah.
Cocaine, in case you don't know.
Yes, there was, it was cocaine, there was methamphetamine. And there was heroin. Yeah. And that was your whack, really.
Cocaine, crack, and heroin. Meth is new, relatively new.
I guess, but downtown. When I came back. Mm-hmm.
Which is around?
2009. That I was like, I didn't recognize the Downtown
East Side. Yeah, meth is coming on the scene.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, to step up the game a bunch of notches was when fentanyl came on the scene, because it's such tiny amounts. So, you know, you can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? With those, because it's so powerful, so potent, that you don't need very much. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, any of the other drugs get stepped on so many times down the line. So when it comes in from a state of 100% purity, mm-hmm. to down to street level, it's been stepped on and cut and all these kind of things, yeah. with all kinds of horrible shit, mm-hmm. right? Whereas fentanyl, you know, wow, a very small amount that you can mail.
You want it to be cut.
Well, yeah, you want it to be cut. Yeah. But what I mean is, like, a small amount. So Canada Customs only opens packages or x-rays them or whatever if they're over a certain amount of grams, mm-hmm. right? So you can, like, in an envelope, like a letter,
yep.
you could mail fentanyl and have enough to, you know, make a lot of money.
Yep.
And that's another reason it was so popular.
All you need is some fucking Bitcoin.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, and because of this, I guess you're right. I guess policing changed. Mm-hmm. But it changed in the 10 years that I was gone from 1999 to 2009.
That was the crack boom. That was crack time. Those were some of my years down there. And it wasn't pretty by any means. And at that time, based on that perspective, I'd say this is one of the nastiest, worst places on earth. It can't possibly get any worse, but it seems to have gotten worse, more violent. And I think it has a lot to do with meth and fentanyl, that combination. Meth alone has all sorts of bad mental health outcomes.
So
it makes you stabby sometimes. It makes you deluded.
It makes you stabby.
Fentanyl.
How you feeling? A little stabby today.
Fentanyl. Okay, if you don't know anything about opiates.
Okay.
Fentanyl is the worst fucking drug on the face of earth. It takes all the worst characteristics of heroin, mm-hmm. the crippling fucking withdrawal, and the worst aspect of crack, it's over in 2 seconds, and combines them in the most fucking vicious, noxious drug possible. And I think that There's something to be said for the desperation that fentanyl leaves you feeling, because you go into withdrawal, you go into hard withdrawal, you go into hard withdrawal so fast. Couple that with a methamphetamine psychosis, and you have a nasty, nasty combination.
Oh, okay. So, you know, it's a lot clearer to me when you explain it that way. Sounds like a wonderful drug. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the youth that we dealt with in detox, I couldn't figure out, because I knew lots of guys who'd gone through withdrawal from mm-hmm. smack, mm-hmm. and it's horrible, mm-hmm. right? But you know you're not going to die for it. But some of these kids were like horribly, horribly, horribly dope sick. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, hey, you know, don't be such a pussy.
Yeah.
But maybe, is that why, I'm guessing? Because it must have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I think it... Yeah, but a heroin withdrawal is bad too. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
I think that few people nowadays, because of the plethora of medications available to them, mm-hmm. ever actually have to endure anything like a withdrawal. So, I mean, there were times in my life where I had to withdraw and I had to kick dope because I had to get clean for work, or there was just no more money and I had no choice and there's no access to Suboxone or methadone or any other medications, and eventually you get used to it. You know it's horrible, but you sort of know what to expect. Once you get through the other side, you realize, like, this is bad, but it has a certain rhythm to it, and I'll get through it. And I can drink myself silly or smoke pot until I can't even. It doesn't really help, but it helps. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these kids haven't had that experience. Because they don't have to.
No, I suppose not. I still maintain that, and speaking from personal experience, alcohol withdrawal is, you can die from it.
Yes, you can.
Which, may I say, is information I could have used before I decided to go cold turkey from drinking.
Mm-hmm. Not wise. Never do that. If you're listening to this,
ever do that. Go see your doctor and get them to give you something to help you with withdrawal. The reason I say it is, well, I was lucky. I didn't have a heart attack, but I had three seizures, many hallucinations. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'd had hallucinations in the past, so that didn't freak me out too much. I was like, oh, you guys are back. But yeah, it was, dude. And then one day you're like, what? Oh, no. Today I really need, I got to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Because that was the day that I had come through withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And I'd never felt normal before. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I got to go to the hospital, man. Mm-hmm. I am dying.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. I was just back to normal. But regardless. So to me, when I think about, you know, defunding the police and abolishing the police. When I first heard abolishing, I was like, what the hell? Like, you think about the downtown east side, and all of a sudden there's no cops, right? Because that's what, let me find it here.
That's one of the things that was when people talk about abolishing the police. I'm like, then what? Like, I don't even have the imagination to comprehend what would come after that.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it here. Defunding the police. Can free up funding that we can reinvest in services that provide real safety for both kinds of communities. Apparently, we only have two fucking communities. And this is coming from the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, Sandy Hudson, in Toronto, not Black Lives Matter, Vancouver. The communities that are constantly exposed to police violence should not be deprived of effective safety and security services simply because more privileged communities feel safer when calling the police is an option. True. However, my thing right there when I'm reading this is, like, if it's Vancouver City Council and all of a sudden that money is not going to the police, if you telling me they're going to put it, oh, we better give more money to the ACT teams. I don't think so. Do you know what I mean?
There's also an assumption there that the people in social services know what the fuck they're doing and are making a difference.
Yeah, don't even get me started. That's a whole show on its own.
You know what I mean? It's like defund the police and then shovel money towards who?
Yes, I know.
Who and for what?
So here's the thing, right? If you do... Also, our mayor... Stuart Kennedy? Is that Kennedy Stewart? I don't know. It's one of the two.
I live in a different municipality than you.
Yes. Well, yeah. Vancouver, the mayor is also the chairman of the police board. Mm-hmm. So what is that going to look like? Mr. Mayor, we want you to defund the police because we don't think that this system is working. Okay, let me just bring that to the board. As he takes off one hat, puts on another. Board, what do you think? Absolutely not. Well, I've had a good long talk with myself, and myself told me to go fuck me. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean?
But the police isn't working?
The police hasn't worked in a long time. Let me tell you.
Hold on.
Let me tell you.
The police isn't working on the news in black communities. The police works here in fucking Burnaby. The police works great in fucking Deer Lake. The police works great in fucking West End, West Van, North Van. Works fantastic. We never fucking noticed them.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone has money in those neighborhoods.
Exactly. In many Canadian cities, including Toronto and Vancouver, police account for the largest chunk of municipal budgets. This year, the City of Toronto budgeted $1.2 billion towards police services, while the City of Vancouver invested $340 million, more than one-fifth of the city's operating budget. Vancouver City Councillor Pete Fry told the CBC this week that he received over 2,000 emails calling for defunding the police. Fry said fully defunding the police would be complex, but he and other counselors are looking forward to diverting resources. Yeah, okay. To what? We need to start making those new investments so we can gradually move away from the kind of police model that we see today and allow the police to focus on catching real bad guys.
Who are?
Who? Yeah. Well, according to them, you know what I mean? And according to us, the bad guys are two different people. Mm. One of the reasons that myself and many others are against defunding is, like I said, I don't think the funds are going to go where they're supposed to. When they talk about, like, because normally the normal police reaction to a shooting of a person of color or a report comes out that said, look, this is without a doubt systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys, you guys have a record of this, of beating up people of color, of shooting them, of, carting them, of traffic stops for no particular reason. You have a history. So what's the deal? Well, first of all, we're going to look into that. You know what I mean? And we're going to commission a study, and then we're going to petition the city council for money for body cams. And then we're going to send every person on the force to sensitivity training. Huh? Huh?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
But we need another $12 million for all that.
Exactly. So that's why I'm kind of against that. Mm-hmm. But so here's some other, Michael Denzel Smith, who wrote for The Nation. Do you ever read The Nation?
Glenn.
Yeah.
I don't read.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I forgot.
Right now, to get a grapple on the situation, I'm reading Plato's Republic.
Why would you do that to yourself? I read that.
I think it's very pertinent in these times.
Well, it is.
Democracy doesn't work, folks.
No, not the way we do it.
No.
So, anyways, basically he said, what do you do with an institution whose core function is the control and elimination of black people specifically and people of color and the poor more broadly? You abolish it. Abolishing the police means getting rid of what we traditionally understand to be a police force.
Is that the police's function, really?
Well, you got to understand, from this, now this is from a HuffPost article. There is an unbroken line of police violence in the United States that takes us all the way back to the days of slavery.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Canada.
No, I'm just saying, I'm giving you an idea of where it comes from. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to Canada. Mm-hmm. The aftermath of slavery, the development of the Ku Klux Klan. There is so much history of racist violence that simply to bring one person to justice is not going to disturb the whole racist edifice. And that was Angela Davis, who is... sorry, I lost that. I'll get back to it, though. Anyways, here in Canada, so yeah, in the States, apparently the history is originally there was like kind of vigilantes, but guys who were hired by plantation owners, let's say, to catch runaway slaves and also to card people. That was like the first carding, because if you were a slave and you had to leave the plantation, you had to carry a card from the plantation owner, from your owner, that said you were allowed to travel outside. And you'd still get a shit kicking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just wouldn't get lynched, right, if you had the card. So these guys' jobs were to catch runaway slaves, to, stop people. Hey, what are you doing? Why aren't you in the fields working? That kind of thing. And they were horrible people, right? They were, essentially bounty hunters, I guess, for lack of a better term. And then, of course, you know, after abolition, the Ku Klux Klan was a thing because now, you know, there was people were freed. And a lot of the police forces in the southern states developed out of those organizations. And in places like New York, that was a whole different scene, right? That was more along the lines of what they had in the UK, right? A lot of Irish cops.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of, like, yeah, New York, Chicago, Boston, a lot of Irish cops, right? Because that's one of the things, that's what you do, right?
If you're... I believe there's also private security involved at that time.
Yeah, there was, the Pinkertons.
Oligarchs and large factory owners had their own private security.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff.
To crack heads of unions and stuff like that.
So the police in America were never, you know, that whole to serve and protect bullshit is exactly that. Here in Canada, our policing was very much based on the UK, but the RCMP in particular, who were originally the Northwest Mounted Police, were formed. And they were very much paramilitary, but they were formed specifically to deal with, you know, the indigenous population, because we were pushing out west. You know, there was a ton of stuff here to take, right? Very rich in resources, but you know, those pesky natives again.
Yeah.
So we're gonna essentially form a police force. Which is just a legal way of getting rid of them altogether, you know, shoot the kill kind of policy. So that's where the history of the RCMP.
So they're the spearhead of an invasionary force.
Yeah, basically, essentially.
But they also have to manage conflicts within their own little settlements and stuff like that.
Sure, yeah. But that was nothing.
Yeah.
That was nothing compared to just going in. You know, it was still even in the, you know, in the 50s and 60s, it was the RCMP's job to come and take children away to residential school. How is that a police person's job? It's not. Because,
That's a social worker's job.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started. So, anyways, that's kind of our, where our policing in Canada comes from with the RCMP, with the other.
So, versus the United States, we have a nationalized, sort of standardized policing presence.
There's
no such thing exists there.
Yeah, in the States, you know, it was Billy Bob, Cletus, and Skeeter.
Whoa.
Who they just gave some guns to and a couple of horses. And up here, you know, it was the Queen's Cowboys, right? And then the provincial police forces, like the OPP. I believe British Columbia used to have a provincial police force as well. A lot of their policing that was tied to like railroad oligarchs, right? So again, essentially private police forces. And again, they use those guys. It's like, well, we need to put the railway through here. And you guys live here. So we're going to have to kill you. Is that okay? Are you good with that? Anyways, so that is kind of the history. And it's funny because in the UK, back in Victorian times, like basically just prior to the Ripper killings, which we got to do a show on that. I know everybody has, but I'm a big fan of the Ripper.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Jack.
You're a big fan of Jack the Ripper?
No, I'm a fan of the whole conspiracy kind of thing. They've never found out who he was. Anyways, around that time in Victorian England, just prior to that was when the first police force was founded by Sir Robert Peel. And nobody wanted it. And this was to do kind of similar to the downtown east side, that part of London, right? Whitechapel and all that shit. So it's like, we need to clean this up. Like, seriously, because there was nothing down. There was like no law. People just do what they want.
Opium dens.
And so, yeah, but the general public, not even just the people who lived in that part of London, but the general public were like, no, Mm-hmm. They were kind of like Americans and guns. Mm-hmm. No, you're taking our rights away. We mm-hmm. don't want these people. Who are they? They can't tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. So it was a big deal. And also, for the longest time, even now, you know, the police in the UK still don't have guns.
They don't carry guns, no.
They have access to the armed response unit, mm-hmm. you know, which can come, like, in a heartbeat, but...
You only need to worry about them if you're Muslim.
Yes, yeah. That's true. So, a whole different kind of style of policing over in the UK, although now in the UK, a lot of cops are like, you know, we kind of need guns now because mm-hmm. it's getting a little dangerous. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the case or not, whether that would be a good thing, I don't know.
Well, who do they need to fight?
Well, they're saying that crime, because of drugs, is a little bit crazy. And
Eastern and Europeans.
And very violent.
And the European Union. And free travel through Europe. Unimpeded trade.
You're not one of these Brexit guys, are you?
Why the fuck not?
Oh, my God.
Why the fuck not?
Have you learned nothing in the time we spent together?
I don't trust world governments.
Anyways, so defunding the police, I don't think is an option. Abolishing the police. So here's my question. You get rid of the police, mm-hmm. right? And what's that going to look like? And people are saying, well, we're not going to get rid of the police. Even if we abolish them, we're not going to get rid of them.
So then words don't mean what they mean?
Well, I guess, I mean, you have to think about it, right? So I have, like myself personally, have been in situations with dealing with clients mm-hmm. who are like really in full-on psychosis and really high. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that if it had been a police incident, that person would be dead. Right?
Or things would get worse.
Or they would certainly get worse.
They do have that effect on people sometimes.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
So, and in all those situations, three situations in particular that I can think of, it was, I managed to de-escalate it. Right? I'm not saying, you know, that's that's what I'm great at. It just...
I've seen you do it. You're pretty good.
But... Yeah. The point is, if the police had been involved, I'm sure it would have ended badly. And one of them, I know, would have ended badly. So what do we do? You know,
It is a fucking miracle what you can do with a crazy person with just a kind word, a fucking joke, a sandwich, and a free smoke.
And treat them like a human being.
And
I agree. Yeah.
Like,
I agree 100%. Yeah. So, you know... What are we going to suppose, you know, what comes out of everything that's happening right now in this whole movement? What is it going to look like? And what do you personally, what would you call the cops for in a situation? Is there anything that you can think of?
Is there anything that I would call the cops for?
Yeah.
If I felt like my life, my body, and the lives and bodies of my family were being threatened by someone outside her fucking door. Otherwise, I don't call the cops.
Okay. And who's going to come, right? In this new iteration of
I don't fucking know. This defund the police thing is very, very, very concerning to me. Not because of the issue. I think it's probably a good conversation to have. And I'm glad people are having the conversation. And the conversation is about defunding the police or abolishing the police. It's about trying to come up with a new model for policing. That's interesting to me. But what I'm, and this sort of leads into what Plato's Republic, well, talking about Plato's Republic earlier, there is a fucking mob out there right now. Not maybe a physical mob, but a fucking sort of like an ideological mob. There is a sentiment out there that we need to fucking do something. We need to fucking do something now. We need to, and something is better than fucking nothing. But sometimes doing something is worse than doing nothing.
Well,
that concerns me.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is, when it comes to power structures,
because the police are low hanging fruit here.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah. And the cops in general.
Because if we want to talk about this as a structural problem, all of a sudden we're pointing the finger at the thumb. We're saying it's all the fucking thumb.
I know.
You fucking thumb. Like, you're fucked everything up. Like, yep. You're not attached to a hand or a fucking arm, and there's not a fucking brain that's moving you around.
Yes. That is very true. Good
the
analogy.
The cops are a fucking thumb.
But you have to look at, you know, in general, you can always rely on, you know, like, my golden rule is follow the money, right?
Always.
Whatever happens to be wrong
always.
With a system, and when people are, you know, living in poverty, like they do here in Canada, we have third world poverty in a rich, rich nation. Follow the money, man.
Maybe like, 1.5 world poverty.
Yeah. So, you know, and any time that there is corruption, follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any time that you have dictators and people like that. So, like, America right now, the U.S. is, to me, like, they're walking a fine line. They're teetering on mm-hmm. the edge of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Because, we know. We know that Trump is what he is. But, you know, he's a symptom of everything that's gone wrong in that country for a long, 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 long time. And one of the problems with America is that, yeah, obviously, most everything they do, you know, is... like if you're white, if you're middle class, you're probably going to be okay, even though middle class isn't really a thing anymore. But, you know, how can a country that has from its very beginning, from its roots, always said that only you guys over here deserve this, but these people don't. These people, they deserve fuck all. They don't deserve medical, they don't deserve a roof over their head, they don't deserve shit, nothing. But we over here do. But even you people who do, we're not going to give it to you.
Yeah, we're so, the state now where nobody
because
deserves that unless you have the money to pay for it.
From its roots, it has always been an unfair nation. So they're never, you know, they bang on about democracy. They're not a democracy. You know, as long as people are being treated poorly, unfairly, you can never, like, at what point are they going to realize that, okay, we just have to start over? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's sometimes so, it feels a little too easy to be picking on the U.S.
I use them as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And who was it? Was it Robin Williams who said that Canada must feel like they're living above a meth lab? Which I always loved that line.
I wouldn't mind living above a meth lab.
Hey, focus.
Focus.
So, anyways, yeah. And oh, I was going to talk just briefly. Time goes by very quickly.
It does.
One of the places that they have kind of a alternative to the police, because in Winnipeg, huge First Nations mm-hmm. population, compared to, you know, a lot of other cities. And have you heard of the Bear Clan Patrol? And they were formed in 1992 in Winnipeg, Manitoba. James Favell is the executive director of Bear Clan Patrol Incorporated in Winnipeg. He was instrumental in getting the group up and running again in 2015. Violence against Indigenous women and girls is what started Bear Clan the first time and what it has inspired its resurgence. So if you remember Tina Fontaine, 15-year-old who was lured into prostitution by people she knew, she was murdered, her body was discarded into the Red River. That was again... that was the last straw for me, said Favell. Favell, by the way, I heard this guy in a CBC interview. He goes, yeah, we knew that the police weren't doing dick for our people. And so we formed this. And he goes, and it had to be like a peer-inspired thing. He goes, so I'm a four-time convicted felon. So there's no way in the world that the cops were going to have anything to do with me or I was going to be able to get any funding. But now these guys are actually a legitimate community sort of police force.
Are they a police force or like a security?
They're not a police force. They're not a security force. But when something like that happens with a youth like Tina Fontaine, they're out there first. Mm-hmm. They're like, before the cops can go, oh, I don't know, like I just ordered some Wendy's. Mm-hmm. I got to wait for that. And then, you know, Bob, he's got a thing. So, yeah, we'll be there in a couple of days, mm-hmm. I guess. Before any of that, you know, basically these guys will be there first. They've got a good relationship with the community. Mm-hmm. And they're aware, you know, they're in touch, they're in contact, they're on top of shit. So, you know, and it's worked well. And
they're kind of like they gather intelligence and build relationships. Do they have a relationship with the police?
They then? Do now. Yeah. They do now. This guy said now, you know, in the beginning, they wanted nothing to do with us. Mm-hmm. And they just thought it was going to be bad news. But now they do actually have that relationship with mm-hmm. them. Let me see, because we are kind of running out of time. Mm-hmm.
We did want to talk about fentanyl.
Yeah, we did want to talk about fentanyl, and we did a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
I would like to quickly, I said I was going to mention the, reading list, because this, is the, Indigenous Peoples mm-hmm. Month. And normally, I think June 21st is National Aboriginal Day, Indigenous Peoples Day.
I have no clue.
But
I've never even heard of this before.
Haven't you? I've been to lots of stuff. I usually go to Trout Lake, but I don't think there'll be anything happening this year.
And you're more fully involved in social services than I am.
This is true. Okay, so a reading list, if you were interested in learning more and being able to like educate yourself. So here's just something that a place to start. So you should read, first of all, the Truth and Reconciliation Report. There's like a bullet point kind of abridged version. Birdie by Tracy Lindberg, great book. Indian Horse by Richard Wagamese. Now, I'm just finishing Medicine Walk by Richard Wagamese. Great book. Mm-hmm. He's a great writer, fiction. But, great guy. Number four, The Inconvenient Indian by Thomas King. We talked about that mm-hmm. earlier. That's the one you should start with. Mm-hmm. If you know nothing and you want to know more, because he explains things in... he's got a great sense of humor. He's a sarcastic son of a bitch. Five, Up Ghost River by Edmund Matawabin with Alexandra Shimo. The Reason You Walk by Wab Kinu. Price Paid by Bev Sellers. Wenjack by Joseph Boyden. Secret Path by Gord Downie and Jeff Lemire. That was that,
Gord Downie from The Tragically Hip?
Yes. It was like a graphic novel.
Okay.
About a kid who mm-hmm. ran away from residential school and died in the process. The Outside Circle, The Education of Augie Mursty by David Carpenter and Augie Mursty. The Break by Katerina Vermette. The Lesser Blessed by Richard Van Camp. Dancing on Our Turtle's Back by Leanne Simpson. And In This Together, 15 Stories of Truth and Reconciliation, edited by Daniel Metcalf Chanel. And then there's a whole other list for, you know, young adults, middle grade books, picture books for kids. Mm-hmm. There you go. So the thing I was pissed about, as I said, was, like I said, I've been defending China like they're, you know, my bro.
I don't know where this defending China thing came from.
Well, because I just think people always, because there's always a scapegoat. You know what I mean? When normally the answer is right here.
Yeah, but sometimes not everything in the world is racism. I think sometimes you look through things through that lens. But there's something called realpolitik as well. There's a power game going on in this world right now, and
Yes,
all the players are self-interested, China included.
Well, yeah, very much mm-hmm. so. So I, yeah, basically I said that I thought that China basically did a good job of containing the virus, COVID-19.
Of course they did. Their state's musculature is, they're more jacked than us and in the power they can exert over individuals.
Well, you know, I said that they did a good job of you know, trying to keep it from spreading
mm-hmm.
because they have a huge population.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there was a lot of stuff on the internet, like the doctor who tried to warn everybody and then mysteriously died. And I was like, oh, come on, really? It's just, you know, more just dog whistle, yeah. gaslighting shit. And then I started to to read a little bit more because
mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I have been known to be wrong. So newly released access to information documents reveal details about a shipment of deadly pathogens last year from Canada's National Microbiology Lab to China, confirming for the first time who sent them, what exactly was shipped, and where it went. Because this was one of the things people said, it's got something to do with that lab. You yeah. said the lab was like 200 feet away from the yes. wet market.
Yeah.
CBC News had already reported about the shipment of Ebola and Henipa viruses, but there's now a confirmation one of the scientists escorted from the lab in Winnipeg amid an RCMP investigation last July was responsible for exporting the pathogens to the Wuhan Institute of Virology 4 months earlier. And the doctor and her husband, so the doctor is Shango Chu, her husband, Kei Ding Chang, and her students from China were removed from Canada's only level 4 lab over what's described as a possible policy breach. That's a pretty mm-hmm. big breach. The Public Health Agency of Canada had asked the RCMP to get involved several months earlier. The virus shipments are not related to the outbreak of COVID-19 or research into the pandemic, Canadian officials said. PHAC.
And all that means is it's not COVID-19 that was exported.
Well, but apparently there was other exports.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm reading this book right now, and it's called Age of Ambition, Chasing Fortune, Truth and Faith in the New China by Evan Osnos.
Mm-hmm.
And in here, so he interviews a lot of people. He's a journalist and he talks to the newly rich, the new rich in China.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the history of kind of everything in, you know, since Deng Xiaoping said, you know what, it's okay, let's go get rich.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he interviews somebody in this book who talks about how much the government covered up SARS when it first happened. And there was a lady who's a journalist in there. Her last name is Hu. And she's quite well known. She runs a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, we have to report on this. And of course, eventually somebody from the ministry said, yeah, no, mm-hmm. you're not going to talk about this ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all my defending of them, well, I could be wrong. There may have been a bit of a cover-up there.
There's probably cover-ups to go around in most countries, varying degrees.
Well, yeah, but I think this is a pretty big one, like what covering up what has turned into a crazy, like deadly, you know, pandemic.
They'll fall back on, well, we were doing it out of the national security. There would have been a stampede, okay. And there would have been a greater panic if we had let the truth come out early on.
Before we go, and it's probably, you know, I look forward to this podcast mm-hmm. every week.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get to talk about shit that I think most people aren't talking about,
mm-hmm.
probably for good reason. But I've always looked forward to Harsh's Conspiracy Corner.
Okay.
And, yeah.
You want to talk about conspiracies?
Yes.
Okay, so all this All this racism shit has me thinking.
Okay.
Has me thinking about Ronald Reagan. I was trying to find that video earlier. Maybe I'll afterwards and then
in post
we'll just I'll find the clip and maybe I'll throw it in right
here.
Ronald Reagan said this.
Okay.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? What could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat of war?
So just to recap briefly.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan was fucking nuts, you know that.
Right? Oh, yes.
He was fucking insane.
But, and again, America, it's like an actor.
Yeah, yeah. But
who played in movies with chimps.
But nevertheless, he has a point. He said, I wonder what would happen to us if a foreign invader showed up. How quickly would our differences evaporate? And I think he has a fucking point, in a way. If there is some consciousness out there, some entity that knows itself the same way that we know ourselves, but it's not us, it would make the difference between us within the human race kind of fucking superficial. At the same time, during this COVID crisis, we have the U.S. Navy acknowledging that three videos of unidentified flying objects, they want to call them UAPs, but that's just some fucking marketing bullshit. They're UFOs. Unidentified flying objects are just that. They are not identified. They're not drones.
Mm-hmm.
They're not any known U.S. aircraft. They're not any known non-U.S. aircraft.
Well,
performing maneuvers that are highly unusual. And these are captured on FLIR cameras, gun cameras, by a variety of aircraft in different time periods, 2004 and off the west coast of the United States, San Diego, and 2017. And when you get into these stories, there are people there talking about what they saw, and it is absolutely fucking insane. Pilots having visual contact with objects that are flying around in ways that they can't even fucking fathom. And no one is talking about it. I think it could be the antidote to our fucking racism.
You think so? Because you have a lot more faith in the human race than I do. Just what little I've seen during COVID-19, I think it would seriously, if aliens showed up, you know, if it was like, what's a good example? Independence Day, when it, all of a sudden they're just there in the sky, hovering, and we're waiting to find out what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Before they start, you know, annihilating us. Before any of that happened, I mean, we'd all be dead. We'd be killing each other left, right, and center. Because I have seen people do crazy shit just because they got told to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you tell me that for the next however many months, I got to stay home and watch TV. I'm pretty good with that. And you're going to pay me to do it?
Yeah.
But no, people were going crazy. Mm-hmm. And, and got all racist about it, too. Started attacking Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
Usually old Asian people.
Mm-hmm. A couple people did that.
So, you know what I mean? Yeah, I don't have any faith. I don't think it would be...
You don't have faith. You don't think that something like that would jar people to have and get them to start asking questions about their place and their place in the universe and what values are of importance to them. No? No faith? No faith in that?
Well,
I think
maybe...
you may be fucking right.
Yeah, I don't know. We're pretty stupid. I'll say this.
It's the most interesting thing in the world to me. I mean, I read your reading list. My reading list right now is like fucking... It's about aliens.
But the thing
read UFOs and the National Security State by Richard Dolan. It's a good book.
Really?
It's actually a really, really good book.
What I was going to say is I think that... if something like that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so here's what we're good at. We're really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're good at getting ourselves into shit. But then we're really amazing at fixing it.
You think so?
Yeah, because when it comes to technology and stuff like that, people figure out a way to do things.
I think we're good at fucking... We're smart. We figure something out. We make something. And then we're not smart enough to deal with the unintended consequences.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. We fuck it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People were like, oh, there's this black gooey stuff in the ground. And apparently it can make things go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's just use it till there's none left. And destroy half the fucking planet in the process.
Well, I think they didn't know that.
And then when it's almost gone, we'll get really, really ugly about it.
Oh, fuck's sake.
So, well, you know what?
Yeah.
It's that time.
It is that time. Right now.
That's
my wife saying, what the fuck are you doing?
I hope everybody enjoyed this. Episode 2. Mm-hmm. Wallace Hartley Presents. I certainly did. I'd like to talk more about the whole police situation on our next episode. But I would like to delve into more about really how we deal with the drug problem in this country.
Yeah, because if we want to talk about why the police get so much money, that story is tangled up in the criminality of doing drugs.
Well, yeah, and that's definitely something that I'm totally 100% in favor of.
Defund the police?
Decriminalizing.
Legalize fucking drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brothels while you're at it, too.
Yeah, that's a whole other one. I agree with that.
That's something that's come up in China recently. There's a man talking about, due to the gender imbalance in the population, because of the one-child policy, men don't have enough access to their God-given right to sex.
Yeah.
Or their fucking Mao-given right
to
sex.
Dude.
So they want to legal... There's one man shouting off the rooftops to legalize brothels.
Yeah, you're talking about a country where, like, people have married their sex dolls.
Really?
So, yeah. It's...
Sounds racist, Glenn.
No, it's just fucking weird. So, anyways, thanks for joining us. We're going to delve a little more deeply into these topics and many, many more... Mm-hmm. Please.
We're going to teach you how to buy fentanyl online.
We're not going to do that.
No?
No.
Okay.
I don't want the cops kicking in my door.
Okay.
They're not defunded yet.
No.
They're certainly not abolished. Listen, please tell your friends. Have a listen. We're on Spotify, soon to be on the other platforms. You can check us out on Podbean.
Yeah.
Also.
And if you want to lose a friend, tell them about this podcast.
Yes, definitely. Or you just want to piss somebody off. Yeah. You got an enemy, tell them about this podcast. Yeah. But share and check us out on YouTube as well, because as well as the audio podcast, we also have the video of our handsome goddamn faces.
Yeah. And tell us we suck, because...
Why?
I'm not on Twitter or on any social media.
Yeah,
and I've never engaged in any, like, a flame war. Did they call that? Do they still call it that? They used to call it flame wars back in the day when you were online on a forum. I want to get in a flame war with one of these stupid fucks out there.
There you go. You should do that. Yeah. You should get a Twitter account, for sure.
Fuck that.
So, yeah, and you can check it out on my Facebook page. There's also my website. Got a lot of writing on there, glennlamont.com. But my website is actually titled...
Your website's tight.
What's it? I can't even remember what it's called. How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Anyways, I don't even know my own website's title. Jesus, Harge. Mm-hmm. That's your fault.
That is my fault.
Okay.
I gave you fentanyl before this started.
Thank you for being here. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Have a listen. Tell your friends. We want to be in your living rooms every single goddamn week. Thanks for being here. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.